You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with co-host Josh Newman. Josh, it's a great, beautiful Tuesday. We're Tuesday. Tuesday afternoon. It's getting colder, but it's perfect fall weather. How are you feeling?
It is getting nice out in the sense of really starting to think about putting the shorts away, and we're getting the jeans out, and we're getting the hoodies out, and, you know, give me like 15 less degrees and we're getting the winter hats out, and that's when it's really real.
Hey, Saturday is supposed to potentially snow, so I mean, we could have some fun.
I know. We could have a little minor mini snow game. I don't think I've ever covered a snow game. Have you covered many snow games?
There's been a few, but it hasn't there was one in Colorado. Utah tried flexing and they had all their guys come out without shirts on, and it was mostly their big offensive and defensive linemen trying to flex, you know. And no, but I haven't had to cover too many snow games, so it's been kind of weird. I did sit through one time. I've been to one college football game in my entire life that wasn't covering it, and that was somebody gave me free tickets to the BYU Utah game years ago when it was 3-0, and I sat through that snow mess. It was awful.
I've covered frigid cold games, but I don't think I've ever covered a snow game. I think I'm rooting for a snow game at some point. If it's not this one, maybe Colorado.
It has to. Like, you know, this is totally a side tangent and everything, yeah. But like we keep getting these day games at Rice Eccles Stadium. It's going to be like an 8 p.m. snow kick, you know, against Colorado. No. So
absolutely, dude. After just the heater that we've been on. If you look at the home schedule, they've all been day games with the exception, I guess, of the Florida game. But that was a 6 o'clock start in August. So that game was played like two thirds of that game was with daylight.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think I'm with you. Like, I'm fully convinced that the Colorado game is going to be like 8 o'clock, 7 degrees outside, and it's going to be like 5-2, something crazy like that.
Oh, that's gross. But you're not wrong. You're not wrong. That'll be great. All right. Well, let's jump into this. Let's recap the Pac-12 a little bit. There really wasn't much happening. There was a lot of teams on a bye. So, the biggest thing to me is obviously that Washington Arizona State game. Going into that game, Arizona State they're just not a good team, right? And it's no fault of their own necessarily. They're in a new, you know, system with Dan Lanning, or not Dan Lanning. Sorry. Blanking on his name.
Kenny Dillingham.
There we go. He was with Dan Lanning. There you go.
Yes.
So they're in this new situation. You know, they're still trying to build. They don't have, you know, they don't have a kicker. They don't have lines like they need to. It's just they're trying. And yet, for whatever reason, Arizona State has Washington's number and kept this game close. It was a pick six that ended the game. Essentially, Washington managed to win the game on a pick six. That score was 15-7. It was not an ideal game for Washington. And I don't know. I don't know. Did that change your opinion of who this Washington team is?
You know what? At first, it did, because as you already said, like, this Arizona State team is not very good. They don't have the talent to go toe-to-toe with Washington, which is increasingly, you know, looking like a college football playoff contender. But then you, like, take a day and, like, sit on it, and then I finally landed on, if you're a good team, you have to prove to yourself that you could win some of these ugly, ugly games. Okay. So you outdueled Oregon. You probably got outplayed by Oregon for a lot of that game, but you found a way to get that one done. And then coming off that, you know, that high, right, with game day, right, the sellout crowd at Husky Stadium, you know, you're home again against a lesser team, inferior opponent. You didn't play well. And Michael Penix Jr. didn't play well. He got picked off, which I didn't know was allowed to happen. So there was that. But you figured it out. And somebody had to blink first in that game. And Arizona State blinked first. Washington with the pick six. So, no, I'm not down on Washington. I still think Washington is the favorite right now to win the Pac-12. I think Oregon is 1B. But I do think Washington is the favorite to win the Pac-12. And, you know, you could view this Arizona State game, at least I'm viewing that Arizona State game, as a bit of a character builder. And you prove to yourself that you can, you know, go in the mud and win a game like that.
it, you know, these games happen, right? Like, I don't know that we take too much stock into it. You look at, I think it was the 2021 season for Utah. They essentially had the Pac-12 championship locked up. I think it was just, you know, you win one more game or whatever it was, and everything was going to go their way. And then they went down to, I think it was either Arizona, Arizona State. I know it was somewhere down there. And it was just a brutal game, right? The game was really close. It wasn't supposed to be anywhere near that. Utah got banged up and lost a couple guys to the season as a result of it. You know, it was just one of those games where if you're not playing at your best level or even in a competent level, like, you can get beat, right? That's the difference in being in a Power 5 conference, right? Is you have to bring your A game every single day. And maybe it doesn't have to be A, but you have to at least be competent and do what you need to. You can't just walk through these games. This isn't the old games of playing in the Mountain West where you wake up one day and say, you know what, we're just going to give a, you know, half effort and come in there and roll over teams. It's hard, right? Even a bad Arizona State team can beat you. Look what happened to Stanford. Stanford won, right, against Colorado. And you can argue Colorado where they're at right now. But, you know, I think it's a tough challenge, and I think it'll serve as a wake-up call to Washington. Or maybe this is showing some of the cracks, right? I don't know. I still think Washington is still probably one of the better teams. I just think it caught them. Something happened that they just weren't hitting on all cylinders, and it was a bad week for them.
Yeah, you know, the stretch of 2021 for Utah, that's a good analogy. You had already beaten USC, you'd beaten UCLA, you overcame the Oregon State loss in Corvallis, you beat Stanford on a Friday night. And then all that was standing between you and Oregon was you had to go to Tucson and beat Arizona. And Utah didn't play well. Pretty sure they got a punt block. That might have been taken back for a touchdown.
Who didn't block Utah's punts that season, though? Let's be real.
I think I had a couple blocks that season.
Yeah. It's on the stat sheet somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the lasting image of that 21 game in Arizona was they were up two and they needed to salt the game away. And it was like, rising with his legs, and TJ Pledger on that final drive. They picked up third down a couple times. They picked up fourth down, I think, once. They got in the end zone, and they figured out a way to get it done. And again, that's what good teams do. Like, you know, days aren't going to be perfect. You're going to make mistakes, but you're figuring these things out anyway. That's what that Utah team did in 21. And, you know, despite whatever warts, you know, you saw out of Washington, that Washington team figured it out. And they're 7-0 and 4-0 in the Pac-12, and they're right in position, like, you know, where they want to be. You know, they've gotten through Oregon. They still have to play USC, which I don't know how big of a challenge that is. We're going to get into that. And Utah goes to Seattle on November 11th, and who knows how big that game is going to be, because if Utah can beat Oregon on Saturday, that game against Washington is for everything. Massive game. If Utah can beat Oregon and go to Seattle with that win in their back pocket,
that'll be an interesting thing. You know, I mean, obviously we don't want to get it too ahead of ourselves, but that would be pretty remarkable to be able to have everything on the line for Utah still at that Washington game. So other results in the Pac-12, there really wasn't anything too crazy. Oregon and Washington State played really close. Washington State gave Oregon everything it could in that first half. Oregon was just the better team and came out on top, won 38-24. And then UCLA absolutely trucked Stanford 42-7. Not really much you can learn from that. Stanford is Stanford still, and outside of playing Colorado, they still look like Stanford. So, that's pretty much it from the Pac-12. Anything else that we can glean from that or anything that you're looking at?
I mean, just from a UCLA perspective, I mean, they were sort of pretty much set there for the first 5 or 6 weeks with Dante Moore, right? The true freshman
thing.
Quarterback.
That is a thing.
Dante Moore, you know what? Chip Kelly did not name a starter for the opener. He went with a couple of guys, but then after a game or two, he had settled on Dante Moore. And Dante Moore had struggled enough where Ethan Garbers is now back starting. So that UCLA team is tough. They don't have all the dudes. Their defense is very, very good. And just watching UCLA, even watching UCLA against Utah a few weeks back, it just strikes me as like if they had a quarterback, like if they had like DTR still with this defense, like UCLA would be really, really dangerous. But again, dangerous UCLA team. They're going to win a bunch of games here down the stretch. They just don't have quite the dudes to like really get over the hump and be really scary.
And that's the thing with UCLA, right? It's like they're still in contention. They're still playing meaningful games. And so I think that's why Chip's just trying to get something out of his quarterback play, right? Dante Moore,
yeah.
I think we can all say that Dante Moore probably has the best upside. He probably will be the starter moving forward, but he's young, right? Like as we've seen at Utah, young quarterbacks don't necessarily fare well. There's experienced guys on the team that do well, and we'll hit that more, obviously. But that's just the nature of the game, and it takes some time. So I don't know that there's anything huge coming out of that, but I think it's just UCLA trying to do whatever they can to remain competitive. So let's move over. Let's jump into Saturday's game. Utah obviously goes to the LA Coliseum for the last time. I have to admit, I was a little upset that it was my last time. I think that's always been a fun environment to go to. I hate traveling to LAX, and we can debate that as we did while we were in Los Angeles. But I think there's just something fun about that environment. You can say what you will about the late arriving crowds there and them not having as much passion as some of these other teams, but going to those games mattered. It's always been a fun environment. It's always been close games, or at least most of them have been close. These two teams absolutely hate each other. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm going to miss that. And so from that standpoint, you know, as a reporter, I don't really care where we go, but it is sad to kind of lose a game like that, knowing that it had so much meaning. It was the game that everybody circled on UCLA or USC's fan base and in Utah's fan base. And so that's not going to be there. But Utah gets the fourth win, fourth consecutive win over USC. I think where it's safe to say that USC has a Utah problem right now. And it's not going to be cured anytime soon. So kudos to Utah for getting the job done. But let's set the stage a little bit. Josh, you wrote a little recap of that in your analysis piece on Sunday. Just kind of set the stage of what happened on Sunday or Saturday and just kind of what that environment was like.
Yeah. You know, I think you and I were sitting up in the press box pregame and you're watching warmups and like kickoff is imminent. And I think we both agreed, like, I don't know, the vibes felt weird.
Yep.
And you couldn't really put your finger on it. Weren't like, didn't really know what to expect, right? Like Sione Vaki had this, you know, breakout game against Cal, and Bryson Barnes played, you know, well versus Cal, but you know, this was a different caliber of opponent on paper, a team that can really score some points. And for myself, I didn't think going in there that Utah could keep up with that. I picked USC to win. I think I picked USC to win by like two scores, but then the game starts and it, you know, it becomes apparent very immediately that USC is a little soft. Mm-hmm. Okay. The first three plays of the game were Jaquindon Jackson for 9, Jaquindon Jackson for 13, and Bryson Barnes to Sione Vaki on a wheel route for 53 yards and a touchdown. So immediately the tone and the tenor belong to Utah. And look, Caleb Williams made plays early, right? That long pass to Taj Washington on the first touchdown for
beautiful play.
First touchdown for USC.
I think that one was their. Yeah, that was their first one. Yep.
First touchdown. So, you know, Caleb Williams like drops back and just a big boy like steps up in the pocket, NFL throw to Taj Washington, who makes a diving catch at the one. They do, you know, the little end around to Zachariah Branch, which nobody was defending, not Utah, nobody else. So, but you know, it was a tie, very entertaining first quarter. Okay, 14-14, very entertaining first quarter. And then Utah's defense kind of settled in a little bit, right? And it became a war of attrition. And it became clear that, like, Morgan Scalley, right, the defensive coordinator at Utah, had very little, even no intention of blitzing. He dropped everyone back into coverage, and he was going to make Caleb Williams stay in the pocket and make plays. Utah goes up 28-14. Bryson Barnes tries to give it back with the pick six early in the fourth quarter. And when that pick six happens, the entire building just shifts on a dime.
Completely changed.
And completely changed the feeling in the Coliseum. And another thing that we were talking about up in the press box, why are you kicking to Zachariah Branch on kickoffs
every time? And I mean, Kyle Monday said that they felt like their coverage was good, and it was. I mean, they managed to do it, but I just, like, you're playing with fire at that point.
You know, and the point I'm making here is, you know, Utah's up. They punt to Zachariah Branch late in the fourth quarter. He gets an immediate immediate block upon catching. That springs him down to the 11. Caleb Williams punches it in. Utah is now, after leading, you know, the entire game, is now down 32-31 with a minute and change left. And, you know, we're on the field, and I don't know. I didn't know what to think, really. And credit to Bryson Barnes. He let it drive down the field. You know, they had a – you know, they were the beneficiary of some penalties, right? There was a there was a helmet-to-helmet hit on Barnes by Bear Alexander. That moved the chains. I believe there was another personal foul on that drive that moved them again. They had to convert a fourth and one with Jaquindon Jackson kind of plowing forward. And then, Bryson Barnes' career has been marked by moments, good and bad, specific moments. Okay. The touchdown to Dalton Kincaid in the Rose Bowl, him not playing well in the second Rose Bowl, the 70-yard
touchdown pass. To be fair, nobody played well in the Rose Bowl against Penn State. So
nobody played well in the Rose Bowl. Fine.
Cam didn't even play well against.
He didn't. The 70-yard touchdown to open the season against Florida. And now you have this new Bryson Barnes moment, right? The second and 15 run for 26 yards where he gets outside. He puts his shoulder down and he gets him to, you know, within field goal range. And, you know, while all this is going on, Cole Becker is off to the side, not paying attention to any of this.
There was a lot of fans just screaming at him that whole time, too.
There was a lot of noise Cole Becker. A lot of noise, and he blocked it all out, taking his practice kicks. And credit to him, right? We can all make fun of, like, you know, college kickers, and, you know, these guys are shanking field goals. He went right out there, took a breath, right down the middle, bang. Just a wild atmosphere late. And credit goes to a lot of places. Credit to Barnes, credit to, you know, Cole Becker, credit to Andy Ludwig. I thought Andy Ludwig called a very good game. Some of the stuff in the fourth quarter with them nursing a lead got a little conservative, but I thought Ludwig called an excellent game, putting Barnes in position where he's comfortable and giving him things that he can execute.
It just felt like a game that it was kind of like the coming out party for Bryson Barnes, right? Like, I know you talked about it, him being defined by a lot of these moments, and, you know, for somebody in his, where he's been at his, in his career, the fact that he's had these moments is pretty remarkable, and the fact that he continues to be where he's at. But that felt like a coming out party for him. He felt he looked confident. He didn't seem to shy away from the pressure. I mean, the fact that he throws the pick six and then Andy Ludwig calls another play for him, it's another right passing play. And it was perfect, right? Like, he didn't shy away from it. He didn't look hesitant. Nope. He went right to it. And say what you will about USC's softer defense, they still have dudes, man. Like, this isn't something where, you know, you're playing against stand-up, platforms or whatever you want to call it. Like, these are guys that are really good players. They're just not as disciplined, right? They're not there yet, and obviously there's a lot of reasons why that's the case. But this is a Bryson Barnes that just looks like he's confident, and I think that was the difference. As much as Utah maybe didn't want to trust its offense there at the end, I think they felt confident in being able to give it to Bryson. You know, a lot of things still had to go their way, and you have to credit them for that, right? Like, you've got to credit Bryson for just being able to have the moxie to be able to take it and run, right? Like, there's been many times this season, Baylor being the biggest example, where he was trying too hard to keep the play alive, maybe take the sack or do whatever. In that moment, the play didn't work, right? The play that they needed to get didn't work. He took off and managed to get 26 yards, complete game changer. And it set the stage for, you know, another fun game between these two teams. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we've been to many of these opposing environments, right? They're hostile and during the game, and, you know, everybody hates each other just because they're playing, and that's just the nature of it. But these two fan bases legitimately hate each other. Like, these teams hate each other in a very competitive style. Not like they're friendly, they're amicable and everything on the field for the most part. But, like, this was a budding rivalry. This was a game where it mattered, right? Like, you can see from both sides how much this mattered. You know, if you know, Caleb Williams, I am really struggling with remembering people today. Caleb Williams, you know, he was obviously frustrated. He lost to Notre Dame, and that was a frustration. But you could see on the sidelines how hard he took this game. this was a game that he absolutely wanted. It's a game that he could kind of show, hey, look, I can beat this defense. And once again, Utah took it to him and beat him, right? And for the most part, I don't want to say they made him look pedestrian because, like, he didn't. Like, he still threw for, I think, 256 or something like that.
Yeah.
Not gaudy numbers by any means. But Utah did a really good job of containing him. They kept him in the pocket. Like, the thing that was most remarkable to me is the fact that, you know, he's going to get out there and he's going to kind of extend the plays and roll out. It's when he was holding the ball for 4, 5, 6 seconds, Utah still kept that coverage. They didn't break. They didn't do whatever like they have in the past. Mm-hmm. And they allowed him to be able to like either decide, am I going to run it, which he didn't really run it that much because I think he's changed his mentality this year. And he had to throw the ball away, right? Or he made a play that wasn't ideal and Utah stopped it. So as much as you want this game to just be one game and it's just like, oh, this is just another Utah-USC game, this game mattered for both sides and you could tell that based on the reaction that night.
I would argue that just based on Caleb Williams' standards, I think Utah did make him look pedestrian.
That's fair. Okay? That's fair.
24 of 34 for 256, put up some numbers, but I don't want to call it hollow, but he didn't throw a touchdown pass.
And that's the thing. He didn't throw a touchdown pass, which I can't remember the stat, but I think it's the first time. It might even be in his.
I think they said his career.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was career as well, but I don't want to go that far. But first time in his career that he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass in a game.
So, and again, I think Morgan Scalley has schemed well for Caleb Williams now three times. And yeah, look, you can look at the numbers of the two USC games last year. In the Pac-12 championship game, you know, he was playing at like 30 or 40% with the hamstring. He still went for 350, but he didn't do enough to win a game any of those times. So, you know, Morgan Scalley gets a lot of credit as an elite defensive coordinator, and he's viewed as a future head coach somewhere, whether it's Utah or elsewhere. And I thought that was – you know, that really shined through against USC, just the way his defense played. And that kid is special. But on Saturday, by his standards, I think Utah's defense definitely made him look pedestrian.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you take away the pick six and the long run by Branch, Utah's defense held him to 20 points. Right?
Yeah.
I don't think you can really count that Caleb Williams last touchdown score as anything on the defense. Yeah, they were a little lost, but at the same time, it felt like they were okay with him scoring, which was the best decision. I mean, whether they weren't or not, like, that was the best decision they needed to make. But, like, they held them for 20 points, right? Utah still managed 34. They did exactly what they needed to. They played tough. Those first drives, those are always the fun to watch because they're scripted. Those are the ones that have the most script there. Both teams are going to come out giving their absolute best, or at least trying to, and trying to see what the other teams are giving. Mm-hmm. And both of them, you know, punched each other in the mouth, right? Like they got their own wins and everything kind of worked, and then they settled in. But you could see that, like, okay, Morgan has done a really good job of being able to settle his guys in and say, okay, look, we took some punches there. You know, we didn't do exactly what we needed to, but now let's go finish it, right? And they did that for one quarter without Cole Bishop, at least that the next quarter, I should say.
Right, yeah.
And then they bring him in, and he becomes a playmaker almost instantly and gets the fumble that was forced by, was it Van Fillinger, I think it was?
Van Fillinger,
yeah. And so, like, this is a team that has just done a remarkable job of finding a way to win and maintaining, you know, whatever level of standard that they need to against some of the best talent in the country. So say what you will, but I think it was a fun environment, and the defense absolutely earned its keep this week.
When we had Luca Evans on last week, right, he covers USC for the Orange County Register. I thought Luca made an interesting point / statement. He basically said that coming off the Notre Dame loss, the Utah game was an inflection point for this USC program. And I thought about that all week, and I kind of thought, not only is it an inflection point for this particular USC team, I think it was a bit of a fork in the road inflection point for Lincoln Riley and the program and just the state of the program. USC did not meet the moment at all. They played, I'm just going to say this and people might get mad, like in a vacuum, like USC with all the talent and all those five-star, like they should not be losing to Utah
no.
at home. And like, I don't want people to like jump down my throat. I think if you like think about what I'm saying, you'll agree. Like, USC should not be losing to Utah. Utah should not be walking into the Coliseum and like controlling the tone, controlling the tenor. And USC just was not up for the moment. I thought they played soft. I thought they missed a bunch of tackles. Bryson Barnes went nuts on them. Just they were not ready to meet that moment. That was an important moment for this season, right? You're not going to the college football playoff with two losses. And yeah, I mean, look, you've got one Pac-12 loss, but you still have to play Oregon. You still have to play Washington. Does anybody watching USC against Utah, does anybody think that USC team is going to beat Oregon or Washington? I certainly don't.
No, no.
So what are we looking at here? You're looking at a four-loss USC team. USC is not paying Lincoln Riley eight figures to go 8-4. Bottom line. And Lincoln Riley tried to downplay the, you know, the college football playoff stuff, you know, the national championship stuff.
That he set, you know, by the way.
Hey, come on. you know, there's probably like 12 or 14, 15 teams nationally that should go into every season thinking that they can contend for a national title. USC is one of those teams, and they haven't looked that way for a long time. And Lincoln Riley was brought in to fix that. Now, last year was, you know, despite the way it ended with the loss to Utah and the loss to Tulane in the Sugar Bowl, mm-hmm. Sugar Bowl. You still went 11-3, and you had every reason to be optimistic coming into this season. This is a regression, getting beat up by Notre Dame and Utah walking in there and winning. That's, I don't think you could look at it at any other vantage point. Right now, USC is regressing under Lincoln Riley.
Or this is just who they are. They're Texas, right? Everybody wants to call Texas as being back. They're the exact same situation. They haven't been in any meaningful games for a very long time. And sure, yep. they've had their moments and they've, you know, won Pac-12 championships and they've been at the top probably more than Texas has. But this is the same thing, right? Like you're resting on your laurels of what happened in the past. And as we've seen, nobody cares, right? Nick Saban nobody isn't cares. Resting on his laurels that way. He understands that he's had more championships in current years than any of those two teams combined, and yet he's still not satisfied with where this program is right now. Like, this is the difference, right? USC has a cultural problem where they cannot figure it out. They can't understand it, they can't do it, and they keep thinking that throwing money at a head coach is going to change that. And it's not, right? Like, they've had good coaches, and say what you will about Clay Helton and his other things, like, they want a sexy hire, and when that sexy hire doesn't pan out, it's the exact same thing, right? There's no reason that USC shouldn't have the advantage. There's no reason they shouldn't be Alabama or Georgia or any of these yep. other schools. They have the recruiting prowess, right? They get the guys. They bring
you're
in the guys.
Southern California.
Exactly.
Go recruit somebody.
Like every single summer you're seeing, oh, this five-star guy committed, this five-star guy committed, this four-star guy. Like, there is no reason that USC should be in this situation, and they shouldn't be in this situation even more against this year's Utah team. You want to fight about last year's Utah team, say what you will. They had Cam Rising. They had, you know, a first-round tight end who was a phenomenal player that absolutely diced them up in that first game. That's different. This year, you have a walk-on quarterback who is now, you know, he's proving himself, and maybe that transitions us to maybe talking about him. But, like, you have a walk-on quarterback who, sure, he got a scholarship this year and everything, but, like, the reality is Bryson Barnes, I don't think this was exactly it, and so I'm putting words into people's mouth, but, like, they essentially were pushing him out the door. Right? Like, he wasn't their future. Like, it was Brandon Rose, it was Nate Johnson, and whoever else they were going to have after that. Bryson Barnes stuck around and continued to fight. They've got a million injuries on the offensive side of the ball. They've just lost more on the defensive side of the ball. There is literally no reason for USC to lose to Utah. Now, you know, you can say what you will about everything. I just think Kyle Whittingham knows how to get the most out of his team. And it works, right? Lincoln Riley is resting on his laurels and saying, I can do everything I can on offense and do all this. Even then, their offense wasn't outlandish, right? Like, they have great skills players, and I think they probably take a step back in their skills players from last year. You had Jordan Addison. You've got some other dudes that were great. And Brendan Rice is a great asset, but he's one guy. They just, I don't know. For whatever reason, they can't figure it out. Utah has been that thorn and maybe exposes them more than anybody else because they actually have a defense. So, I don't know. I still see them as kind of the Texas of college football where they just can't figure it out. And here we are. Is USC back? No.
No. Decisively, no.
4 times not. Or more.
Nice.
I don't know. So let's move on to Bryson Barnes. He's the guy, right? Bryson Barnes is now a captain. He gets that nice designation right before the USC game. He gets to wear that shiny red. It's not shiny. It's pretty. I don't know. Good to see.
Yeah, just for just for context, Cam Rising and Brant Keithy were both captains, but now that they are, officially done for the season, Bryson Barnes and Keaton Bills have taken those two places. So if you notice the C on Bryson Barnes' jersey against USC. That's why. And, that's a responsibility. But, just talking to Bryson Barnes and, knowing what his demeanor is, I'm sure that a captaincy is something that he, he takes very seriously and something he dives into. And look, for better or worse, he is this – look, of course, Cam is like the team leader and the heart and soul, but he's not playing.
Yeah.
He's not in the huddle. And for better or worse – Bryson Barnes is one of, if not the on-field leaders right now for this offense, and why not? You talk to players, you talk to Kyle Whittingham, it sounds like confidence is growing in Barnes every day, and why not? I mean, look at the way he played against USC. He didn't give you any reason not to trust him with the way he played against USC, and as you alluded to, right after the pick six, early in the fourth quarter, Andy Ludwig goes right back to Bryson Barnes, completes a throw, and things are going really, really well right now for Barnes after, an opening month or 5 weeks where, you started the opener against Florida with Nate Johnson making cameos. You were benched at Baylor. You came back against Oregon State when Nate Johnson was hurt. And now you're in a position where you're the guy. There's no more questions. There's no more, what if we're not waiting on Rising to get healthy? It's Barnes. It's Bryson Barnes' show on offense.
Maybe I'm being a little too hyperbolic here, but is it time for everybody to apologize to Bryson Barnes? I mean, for just hating on him, right? Like, I think like a lot of people doubted him. A lot of people thought that he couldn't be the guy.
I think he gave plenty of reason to doubt him.
And that's why I say it's probably more hyperbolic. But
yeah,
I think there was a lot of unrational. Unrational is not the right word, but maybe there was a lot of hate for a guy that had two bad games, right? The Rose Bowl and Baylor. And sure, you could say that he didn't have his best performance against Florida, even though he had the 70-yard touchdown. There didn't seem to be anything that was outlandish. He didn't do anything crazy. But at the end of the day, he continued to put in the work. And he was fighting, trying to be in a two-quarterback system that didn't work. But I think there was a lot of unfair hate directed towards him just because of him being as a walk-on quarterback. So I don't know. I don't know like what the hate was. I mean, I remember when Pete Thamel officially released it. I mean, we'd heard that Bryson was going to start and everything, but Pete got the designation to be able to release that. Yay for that. we'll say what we want about that later. It turned into kind of a cesspool on Twitter, right? And all the message boards about, how much this was going to put Utah back because they didn't feel like Bryson Barnes was the guy. And admittedly, like you mentioned, there wasn't a lot to kind of judge on, right? He had a game against Washington State last year that they didn't really do that well. They won, obviously, and he kind of just kept the game going together. He has a couple games this year. Obviously, the Baylor game was just a terrible game on his front. But there's a lot of things that kind of went into that, and we've talked about it. Now that he's getting the number one reps, I think he's starting to show that he can do it. Now, look, I don't want to sit here and paint this picture that Bryson Barnes is somehow the savior of Utah football and that all of a sudden, this is – they're basically in the same level of Cam Rising. I think he's making plays that are closer to what Cam Rising was doing. Landon King's touchdown, for example, was probably one that looked more like a Cam Rising-type play. He's not there yet, right? But he's getting a lot – you're getting a lot out of him that you weren't getting. He's getting confidence, and he's doing exactly what he needs to get Utah wins.
There is absolutely a perception of Bryson Barnes. This might be in the past, so there was a perception of Bryson Barnes, maybe there still is, that he is not capable enough because he was a walk-on. And he played at Milford High School, which is a 1A program. It's not like he was seeing like top-notch competition playing at Milford. And then you saw you saw how the Rose Bowl went last year, and fine, nobody played well against Penn State. Bryson Barnes really didn't play well against Penn State after he came in for Rising. And people saw what the play calling looked like against Florida. You know, they weren't putting big points on the board. And then the Baylor game, he was 6 of 19. He struggled mightily. So at that point, I think a lot of people were done. And I've said this before, and I stick by this even now with all the success. I think there's a real quarterback development problem at Utah that they cannot recruit somebody to, like, unseat Bryson Barnes. I think that's a problem. And Bryson Barnes is not the long-term answer. At least he shouldn't be. He's got 2 years of eligibility left, but he's in his fourth year of college. I mean, we'll see where that goes, right? He got, he redshirted 1 year. He got the COVID freebie. So he's got a lot of football left to play. Yeah, I think there's a real quarterback development problem that they can't get somebody in here to supplant Bryson Barnes. Now,
can I ask a question, though? Let me ask you.
Please.
If, and I don't necessarily disagree with you on this, but let's say he wins one of two of Oregon, Washington, or let's say somehow magically gets two. Is he the Stetson Bennett, right? Like, is he the guy that, although, like, he probably doesn't have the intangibles as your standard 4 or 5 star guy, can he be the guy because he's done it?
Yes. Yeah, sure. Now look, a lot of this is, well, there's two factors here. One, they're not waiting on Rising anymore, and they're not splitting reps. He's getting all of the number one reps. So he has to be gaining a lot more comfortability, knowing he's the guy. He's not looking over his shoulder. He's getting all the reps. He's going into Saturday more confident. Fine. Number two, I completely lost my train of thought. I don't remember what number two was.
That's my bad.
It's all good. So, that is the main, like, number one bullet point. He's getting the reps, and you have to go into Saturday with a higher level of comfortability. This was number two. Sorry. The emergence of Sione Vaki as a direct snap, wildcat, hit him on a wheel route, traditional running back stuff like handoffs. He's carrying a tremendous amount of the offensive load right now. And as long as Vaki continues to produce, that is going to take an immense amount of pressure off of Bryson Barnes. Bryson Barnes is not being asked to throw the ball 35 times. He's just not. I don't know that he's capable of throwing for 300, 325 yards. So the emergence of Sione Vaki is a bit of a, as far as Barnes goes, the emergence of Vaki is sort of an underrated factor here in why Barnes is playing so well, because they're not asking him to do everything. They're not asking him to do a ton. Don't turn the ball over. I think that pick six was his first turnover of the year, right? That was his first pick.
He had the one in Oregon State right before he got speared, so he had the pick that way.
Yes, yeah. Fine. Okay, so point being, he has taken pretty good care of the ball. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes. He doesn't take a ton of chances. That's all you're asking him to do. So, but to your point, if he wins the Oregon game, if they somehow get Oregon and Washington and they're playing again for the Pac-12 championship, yeah, I guess there are some Stetson Bennett type of vibes, right? Stetson Bennett, when he first showed up at Georgia, was like fifth string. Somebody transferred, somebody's injured. You went to Bennett. He played well. They wanted to go away. They went back to him. And in the end, he wins two national championships. I don't think Bryson Barnes is winning two national championships.
You heard it here first. But Josh Newman thinks Bryson Barnes is winning.
But yeah, no, to your point, it does have some Stetson Bennett vibes to it, but I don't know, man. Like,
it might not even matter, though, right? Like, I mean long-term, right? Like, he's going to be the starter this year, barring something crazy happening. So I guess it's more looking forward at projecting what it could be. Some of that may be Cam Rising next year, right? I think the leading notion is Cam Rising takes the medical red shirt, comes back next year. And so that kind of takes Bryson out of the conversation. But where does that go for Utah after that? I don't know that you go back to Bryson in 2 years. I don't know, this is where it is. So, like, I think it's kind of a moot point in a lot of ways, because Bryson is the guy right now, right? Like, there's no worry that, like, oh, I don't want to say worry. That's probably a bad way of saying it. But there's nothing to really talk about him being the guy next year unless Cam doesn't come back, and then there's a whole nother, can of worms to open up. And that's why I don't think it matters. And I agree with you. I don't think that Bryson is the long-term strategy, and maybe he shocks us, right? Maybe all he needed was just a little shot of confidence. He needed the experience, and then he showcases what he can do. I mean, He was, I don't think he is the state record holder anymore for passing yards in Utah. But I think, you know, he's shown it. And granted, he was doing that against far, far lower talent, right? And so it's now taking it to the next level of, you're now playing against the top end talent in the country. How do you take that? And he's progressing, right? Like Kyle Whittingham says, he's progressing every single week. I don't quite think Kyle is to the level where he's glowingly talking about Bryson Barnes like he did Cam Rising. And granted, Cam Rising is a, I don't want to call him quite generational player, but getting closer to that end where he's just a guy that can do things that are, is different for a team. But I think you're seeing Kyle even kind of warming to Bryson Barnes and kind of giving him a little bit more confidence in the press and giving him what he needs to be successful this year. But to your point, the Sione-Vaki thing is absolutely real because these two players started at the same time, right? Bryson came back into the starting unit. Sione-Vaki was added to the offense. I think they're both together, kind of the sum of the parts, right? The two of them together have allowed Utah to be able to be there. So it's hard to be able to extrapolate that fully from Bryson Barnes, knowing that Sione-Vaki has been that type of a player.
Let's say, hypothetically, and just for the people out there, even though Rising is taking the year and the medical redshirt, there's nothing – he doesn't have to return to Utah. He can use that medical redshirt anywhere he wants. So technically, there is no guarantee that he returns to Utah. So let's stick with that for a second. Let's say Bryson Barnes plays well or well enough to finish the season, no matter what the record is. He plays well enough. Rising leaves. Is the quarterback room open in – spring of 24, or is it Bryson Barnes at number one? No, you know, no questions asked.
I think it's still open. I don't know. I think he obviously would have the upper hand, and I think you would hear Kyle Whittingham say that, right? I think you would hear him say he has the upper hand, but we're going to see, you know, what other guys have as well. I think there's a lot of optimism about Brandon Rose in this program. And, you know, there's a high probability that he could transfer too, right? I mean, anything is possible in this age now. And if Brandon doesn't feel like he's at least in that realm of being the guy, and if Cam is, you know, kind of still waffling on what he's doing, that changes it. But I think because of how much they like Brandon Rose's arm and the ability that he has, that leaves the door open. And it may still tilt pretty heavily towards Bryson Barnes, but I think we would be not doing our job if we didn't think that that was the case, right? I don't think Nate is in that conversation much anymore. I think the time has kind of passed for him, at least immediately. I think he could maybe develop into that if he stays in that position. Maybe they move him to somewhere else, like a JaQuindon Jackson. But I don't see Utah closing that door. I don't see a reason to either, right? Like you've got Brandon Rose that can develop. You've got Mac Howard who's not there, and he's not going to really be in that competition either. You know, Isaac Wilson is going to come in, but he's going to have a surgery, and so he's not really going to be involved with that either. This is going to be a competition, and I just don't see an area where Bryson Barnes necessarily steals it, but maintains it without unquestioned challenge, I guess.
Now, while we're here, we could do this one real briefly. If Rising returns, he's the starter.
Yeah.
That's another year that nobody else is starting. How much patience does Brandon Rose have? He'll be in year three next year. How much patience does Nate Johnson have? How much patience does anybody in the room have if Rising comes back for a seventh year knowing he's the starter? That's the real intrigue to me, is what does the room look like behind Rising if Rising comes back? You have to think the odds are that somebody, at least one person, is transferring. Not all of those guys are going to have the patience to wait it out for another year. Just saying.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I think, you know, the guy that you're hoping to stay is Brandon Rose. I think, at least based on how they've talked about him, right? I really think that they project him to be at least in competition for that. I think you saw that in spring, him separating himself. Going into fall, I mean, he had his moments where he still had to kind of get up to speed, but he was the guy. And so if you can do whatever you can to maintain him and say, hey, look, you're going to be our number two behind Cam, you know, and get that development, all the better, right? And I think that's how you have to play it. I mean, you hate to use this card, but at the same time, it's the card that you've been dealt. Cam's gotten hurt every single year, and you're one play away from being the guy. And so if Brandon can go into that, or whoever that may be, that allows you to kind of keep that. And I don't know if that's the case, and I don't know if that'll happen. A lot of things can change in the next month plus. And so, you know, I mean, we still don't even know what Cam's decisions are going to be. I don't know when he's going to announce that or if he will announce that, right? Like, he's got to announce it eventually, but my guess is they're going to try to maintain that as long as they possibly can to try to keep some of these guys just so that they don't have people flip. So I don't know. It's a tough situation for Utah, and I don't know that it gets any easier.
I was just thinking, when I was a young reporter starting to cover Rutgers, one of the veteran guys on that beat, he gave me some advice. He said, when in doubt, write the quarterback. Oh, yeah. Like, if there's nothing else going on that day, write the quarterback. And this is kind of like what it is. Like, there's always interest in the quarterback. No matter what else is going on with Utah, there is always, always something to talk about with the quarterback, good, bad, otherwise. It's just never ending. Never ending with this Utah quarterback situation.
Last year wasn't, though. I mean, it was boring. Last year was boring reporting, I'm not going to lie. Utah won a lot of games, but there wasn't really a lot to report about because Utah just kind of consistently did that. Early on in the season, they did because they started once again in a terrible way and lost a couple games. But outside of that, there wasn't anything like earth-shattering to report. Oh, who's starting this week or what's, you know, the injury this way. Those to me, like, are kind of the boring seasons as a reporter because there's just nothing to kind of do. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot that went on with that, especially late in the season and the tiebreakers and all that. But like this year, there just feels like there's so much fluidity in this team that there feels more that I can grab onto each week as I'm looking at the teams. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's probably right. I mean, I'm thinking as you're talking, I'm thinking back to last season and yeah, it was pretty vanilla. You know, the loss to Florida was obviously like 9 months in the making. The loss to UCLA, then they come back and beat USC. But things started to get interesting. Tell you what, they beat USC the first time when Rising lost his mind and threw for 415. Yeah. That was a Saturday. And then on Monday, he walks into the meeting room at the football facility with a sleeve on his left knee. Oh,
cool.
That's a thing.
That's fun.
Okay. And then... We all know what happened then. Yada, yada, yada. We all know what happened then. Right?
Gotta love the yada, yada, yada. You missed a whole lot there, right?
That's it.
Well, let's quickly jump to Sione Vaki. There's, you know, I don't know that there's a lot more to say about him other than he's just a phenomenal dynamic player that is just doing everything he can. I talked to Devon Vele this week. He just called him a baller, right? Like, he's a guy that they can't understand how he does what he does, but it's pretty impressive. But with that being said, what happens with him? What if based on what Kyle Whittingham has said and other people have said, what happens with Sione Vaki moving forward?
Yeah, and I'm going to write about this later in the week for KSL.com. But I think in the short term for Oregon, you have to throw the entire kitchen sink at Oregon. Okay, so Sione Vaki will go both ways versus Oregon. I think we can both agree on that. Beyond Oregon, you have Arizona State. Now, if you want to at least experiment with moving Vaki strictly to offense and giving him, whatever, 55, 60 plays strictly on offense, that might be the game to do it. A lesser opponent at home, somebody you should probably beat no matter where Vaki's playing. But I think that Kyle and Morgan Scally and – Sorry, yeah, Kyle and Morgan Scally will only make that type of drastic move if they think that they have enough depth to overcome an all Pac-12 caliber safety in Vaki, leaving that safety position entirely. So what does your depth look like? You obviously have Cole Bishop on one side. Nate Ritchie played the first half when Cole Bishop was suspended for targeting. Nate Ritchie wasn't perfect, but I thought he played well. And look, he's a veteran guy of the program, right? Despite being on a mission, he knows the system. They feel comfortable with Nate Ritchie. And then beyond Nate Ritchie, I mean, the name you're hearing is Jonathan Hall, who's a young guy, be that as it may. Kyle has talked up, you know, John O. Hall for a while now. So again, I don't think that Sione Vaki moves to strictly offense this week. I do think that's coming. And the Arizona State game feels like a good time to at least try that out. And if it doesn't work, all right, great. Like you can go back to playing both ways, but no matter what happens with moving, not moving, Sione Vaki is going to continue to play offense. one way or another. They're not taking him off the offensive side of the ball. Just remember how bogged down in mud this offense was for 6 weeks. It was awful for most of the first 6 weeks. And then Vaki comes and it's a completely different thing. It's dynamic. It's electric at times. He can do, it feels like when he has the ball in his hands, anything is possible. So he's going to keep playing offense, whether it be two-way or strictly. In terms of strictly, we're going to have to see what happens. But yes, I do think that is at least coming in terms of experimentation here within the next week or two.
And I think the nice thing for Utah is on offense, they are running roughly around 70, 71 plays a game. On defense, they're only allowing about 52 a game. Like, so it's not like Vaki has been on the field a ton of times on defense. And don't get me wrong, that's still a lot of play. He's not been on every snap of offense and every snap of defense like Travis Hunter has for Colorado. So it's not quite to the level where he's like a full-time player, full-time two-way player on both sides of the ball, but they're just trying to balance it, right? The quote that Kyle Whittingham said this week is he's probably a bigger impact on the offense than he is on the defense, and he believes that he's one of the best safeties in the country. That says a lot. Right, like that says a lot of how much trust they have in Sione Vaki on the defensive side of the ball. And obviously, anybody that knows Kyle Whittingham knows that he prides on his defense like crazy. But at the same time, when you see somebody of Sione Vaki's caliber, you can't refuse put him on the offense, right? Like their offense is completely different. And the fact that he's able to line up, you know, in Wildcat or line up in a running back position, go off the wheel route, do whatever he needs to, like. He is everything for this offense, and it's opening it up. Devon Vele, you know, he's had a quiet season. He came back for another year despite potentially wanting to leave last year. He got a lot of targets Saturday because Sione Vaki was in the game. It opened it up. It allowed them to be able to do different things, and that's the thing, right? Like, I don't want to say one player is changing the game. He is, but, like, he's changing it in a way that just allows Utah's offense to be more spread out, diverse, right? Like you saw that with a Britton Covey. You saw that with a Dalton Kincaid. If you have one guy that a defense has to factor in and factor in more than just kind of the standard, we're going to be in coverage or man-to-man type situation, that completely opens it up for everybody else because they're not thinking about those other guys. They're trying to key in on, okay, where's Sione? USC still couldn't figure out where Sione was. And so it allowed other people to get open. It allowed him to get open. It allowed him to do different things. And also the thing is, like, he's tough, man. Like, he's breaking tackles. Like, he's literally, like, staring down guys as he's pushing them to the ground and still going for extra yards. Like, this is not your prototypical player that is just set to say, okay, hey, we're going to insert you here. He's a complete freak in what he's able to do. And so I think this absolutely gives Utah the dynamic they need. Like you said, though, Oregon is the most balanced team, and they're going to take their shots. They need him on defense. They can't just say, okay, you're going to stay the whole time on offense. But I think there's going to still be that give and take, right? I still think that this is where Utah can kind of figure out, okay, how can we still keep him in the defense? One name, I'm kind of all over the place right here, but one name also is Teo Johnson. He's been able to slide up into that safety spot as well. He plays nickel, obviously. He's kind of been in that role. So they've got a lot of flexibility here, and I think more than any year previously, at least the last few, this is an offense or defense that can change. And so if they do want to take Vaki out of the defense a little bit more than they have been, I think they have the guys that can manage it. It's still just going to be a tough task.
Watching Sione Vaki on Saturday night, the touchdown pass late in the third quarter, right? That 15-yard touchdown pass where it was a little comeback route. He catches it at the 10, ooh, like plants his foot, stop cut.
Like there's like legitimately there's a few times – like, I've covered the NBA, I've covered all these things. There's a few times where I literally, like, my mouth drops. That was one of those times. Like,
that was filthy.
I think I turned to you and was just like, oh, like, I just don't even know, like, what to think on that type of a play.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the type of player he is. He is dynamic. Like, and that work, like, dynamic, electric, those things get thrown around in sports, like, way too liberally. I am guilty of that myself.
Same.
That is who Sione Vaki is. A dynamic, electric weapon capable of seemingly anything right now.
I love talking to the players about him because they just kind of get a smile on their face when they talk about him. It's like, you know, they could be mad that it's like, oh, I'm not getting the ball or whatever. And that's not this Utah team anyway, but it's just kind of fun to watch them. They kind of light up as well and just love them some Sione Vaki. So We're getting closer to the time that we need to wrap up, but I do want to talk about one more thing. But we gotta be quiet. Shh, Jaquinda Jackson is working. Just kidding. Jaquinda Jackson has kind of put together a quiet, successful couple games. He was coming off of injury. It's been a nagging injury, right? It's something that's probably not going to go away all season. But when he's in the game, I mean, he's doing a lot for Utah. Like, he's finding ways to be able to get in the game. He led the team in rushing yards with 117 yards. And that's not otherworldly, like, numbers. But, like, he's consistently contributing to this offense and doing it in a way that few people are even talking about. And part of that is Bryson Barnes and Sione Vaki and kind of what they've done.
Yeah.
But is Jaquinda Jackson doing what you expected him to do? Now, I should say now.
Now he is. Now he is. 22 for 94 and a touchdown against Cal, 26 for 117 against USC. He was billed as, you know, that bell cow guy who you can give the ball to 22, 25, 27 times a game. And look, he's not going to blow you away with speed, especially now. Like, you watch Jaquinda Jackson run. He is hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He is playing hurt, but he's healthy enough to be out there. And when we talked to Andy Ludwig a couple of weeks ago after the Cal game, I thought he was really good in just pointing out that, like, yeah, Jaquinda Jackson is this, like, downhill, straight-ahead, run-you-over type of bruiser, but Sione Vaki brings a different element, right, can kick it outside, can get to the edge, can go down the sideline. This is what Jaquinda Jackson needs to be doing. Nothing fancy, nothing outside the box, just straight-ahead, follow a block. And it's not like he's averaging, like, 7 yards a carry. He's getting you 4 and 5. He's averaging 5.2 per carry. 5.3 from scrimmage, which I did not realize. He is, after some hiccups, and look, that, you know, that ankle thing, that leg thing is going to keep being a bit of a problem all season, but he's been very good. I don't know that there's a lot of room to complain. And then, kind of quietly, he's gotten really good in pass pro. I mean, there's a couple of times where him coming out of the backfield picked up a blitz, has given Bryson Barnes, you know, more time to operate. So really, really solid. Really solid from Jaquinda Jackson. And if he keeps playing like this, nobody's going to have any reason to complain, quite frankly.
No, and I think this is perfect for him, right? Like, he doesn't have to be the focal point of the offense anymore. He can just kind of quietly do his job and really just kind of make hay, right? Like, Sione Vaki's added that too, and I know we just talked about him, but he allows Jaquinda to be able to work in a way that just kind of fits his skill set. He doesn't have to be the guy that, okay, now I have to take this run off the edge and break away for 40 yards. He can just hit the hole. He can give Utah what they need to as a big physical back, but he's still picking up extra yards, right? Like, it's not like he's just getting those 3 yards. He's picking up 5, 7, and sure, his average is kind of around that 4 to 5 area, but he's doing what he needs to move this offense along. Part of him being able to, or like on Saturday, his run to be able to pick up that fourth down absolutely changed the game, right? Like, they went in and reviewed it, and I don't know why they reviewed it.
But we were, like, looking at each other on the sideline, yeah, like, what are they reviewing?
Like, he was a clear, like, 3 feet over the line. I don't know what it was, yeah. But the fact is he's coming in there and he's doing what he needs to. And part of that is the offensive line is feeling a little bit more comfortable as well. Putting Coley Faiyu in there as the center has helped. You've added a little bit more stability there. They've allowed a little bit more passing, and that's, you know, relaxed defenses a little bit. Jaquinda Jackson is now doing the things that we needed to see from him, right? Like, he's starting to look more like a running back, not a quarterback running as a quarter running back.
Yes.
It's starting to kind of click for him. And as long as he can stay healthy, this feels like it could be kind of another quiet season for him. He's, you know, and allows Utah to kind of do what they need to with him. So kudos to him. I mean, I think that's exactly what they need him to do. Nothing more, nothing less. And continue to move those chains, I guess.
Yeah, we are running out of time, but we should mention real quick, Lander Barton out for the season is a crusher.
Maybe. You know?
I'll get to that. Sorry. Thank you. Lander Barton, we were down on the sideline with like 6 minutes left on Saturday night, had a boot and crutches post-game Saturday, which that's not the best time for information. But, you know, Kyle Whittingham at the time said that they had lost Lander Barton for the season. Didn't disclose the injury. You could assume lower leg. We'll leave it at lower leg. We get to Monday, Kyle's weekly presser. He said that there is optimism that Lander Barton could be back for a bowl game, so he is not necessarily out for the season. Either way, that is your best linebacker. That is your leading tackler. That is a – look, you look at all the different injuries this season, and I think a lot of the injuries, while major, there was depth all over the place, and, like, none of them or very few of them were, like, overly concerning. This Lander Barton thing, to me, is a little bit concerning just from what he does at his position. And that's not to say that Lavonnie DeMooney cannot fill in there, but he's not doing everything that Lander Barton does.
Yeah, I mean, there was things that Lander was doing in that USC. I mean, he was bulldozing guys, right? Like pancaking men. Like, that was one of his best performances as a player. And it was just kind of a freak play at the end of the game where he kind of got rolled up on, and it didn't look good for him. But it wasn't as bad as they feared. You know, he is in a boot. It's no secret. He's walking around. I mean, this isn't like something that's top secret government securities, despite what Kyle might think.
Well, I was going to say, well, depending on who you ask, okay.
But, I mean, like, they're not shying away from it. As much as Kyle's actually been a little bit more open with injuries this year, it's been kind of interesting to watch. And if they can get him back for a bowl game, or, you know, if Utah magically gets to the Pac-12 championship and he can play there, I think that's good things for him. But it doesn't sound too serious. At the very least, you get him back for spring, allow him to rehab and get ready for another year. So it'll be something, right? And maybe Lavonnie DeMooney, you know, he's picked up a lot, just kind of like we saw last year with I'm blanking his name now, all of a sudden Florida kid that transferred from Mo Diabate. Yeah, it took him a while to kick in and kind of understand the system. Yeah. So maybe that's where DeMooney is, and you know, this, they're going to be fine. They've got guys back there. They're not going to be as dynamic as Lander, but they're going to be fine. So,
yeah.
Well, that's it for us today. We've got a lot to talk about on Thursday. We're going to have a special guest. We'll keep that one kind of under wrap and let you know then. But we'll talk about Oregon. Obviously, a fun matchup. This has always been a fun matchup, another one of those that Utah's had. So there's been some instant classics with that one as well, not counting the Britton Covey, you know, punt return, whatever. No, but it'll be fun. We'll chat about that, and we'll get into it as Utah faces probably the most complete team in the Pac-12. So signing out tonight, it's Josh and Josh, and we'll catch you on Thursday.
Later, guys.